Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now Nobel Peace Prize winner Jody Williams. She won the prize in 1997 for her work as the founder of the international campaign to ban landmines. She now chairs the Nobel Women's Initiative and has a new book about her life called My Name is Jody Williams, A Vermont Girl's Winding Path to the Nobel Peace Prize. Jody Williams, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me. And don't you love the clever title of my book?
My Name is Jody Williams.
I didn't want people to get confused.
Oh, that's Jody Williams. Where in Vermont do you come from?
Do you know Vermont?
A little bit.
I was born in Pulteney. It's a tiny town, 1,200 people on the New York border, halfway up the state. But we moved to Brattleboro, a megalopolis 10 times the size.
There were no landmines in Pulteney, no landmines in Brattleboro. What got you so interested in that issue?
Well, my first protest was the Vietnam War, 1970. And it helped change my understanding of U.S. foreign policy. I really believed the mythology of the benevolence of, you know, U.S. supporting democracy, self-determination. Vietnam opened my mind to different possibilities, and I've been an activist ever since.
And you reveal yourself in the book to have been restless and searching for much of your young life. Before you started the international campaign to ban landmines, I see you spent 11 years working on various projects related to the wars in Nicaragua and El Salvador. Mm-hmm. Before that, you moved to Mexico and taught English, and et cetera, et cetera. What do you think was the unifying force underlying each of those seemingly unrelated moves?
I really think that it was the change in my thinking with what happened when I was at the University of Vermont from 68 to 72. It was Vietnam. Mm-hmm. It was the reemergence of the women's movement. It was, you know, Martin Luther King and you know, trying to stop racism in the U.S. And that really had a huge impact on my vision of this country.
You went to college and you got educated.
I went to college and I got educated outside the classroom.
Your family was very unhappy. You write that you continued to go to El Salvador during the years of intense fighting. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, were you kind of on a side there? Were you, you know, for the Contras in Nicaragua, against the right-wing government of El Salvador? Were you choosing up sides, or were you more kind of in the spirit of a Nobel Peace Prize winner trying to be a peacemaker?
In those days, I was a strident activist. Vietnam was just a couple of protests. I was young. It was college. I graduated. I didn't mm-hmm. know what to do.
Right.
When I started working on El Salvador, which was the primary focus of my years, I did a couple years on Nicaragua and Honduras. It was a full frontal commitment to trying to stop U.S. military intervention. So I was opposed to the forces that the United States was supporting to try to stop self-determination in Nicaragua and El Salvador.
With your involvement in that area, do you feel like you have a dog in the fight of what's going to happen in Venezuela after Chavez? Or were you a Chavez fan or detractor or one way or another?
No, I didn't think about him very much, to be quite honest. I worry always when there are changes in Latin America, because the U.S. has always considered it its backyard. It's, you know, since the Monroe Doctrine, we kind of own it in our own mind. And look what happened with the coup in Honduras a few years back. The United States ended up supporting it, and the troubles in that country have escalated ever since. You know, so it's frightening.
So it's 1991, and you get involved in landmines.
Mm-hmm.
At first, you write, you had to be convinced that landmines was worth your focus, as opposed to, say, nuclear weapons or
mm-hmm.
guns.
Mm-hmm.
But finally, you were convinced.
Mm-hmm.
Why that issue?
I was actually invited to consider creating a campaign, and it was two people that kind of tricked me into coming to Bobby Mueller's office. Bobby Mueller is the executive director of the Vietnam Veterans of America Foundation. He combat vet, Marine, shot in the upper spine in his last month there, and spent the rest of his life in a wheelchair. And Bobby had taken a delegation of vets back to the region, partly soul searching, partly, of course, trying to see what they had left in their aftermath, why they had gone. And what he found throughout the Laos, Cambodia, etc., was millions of landmines in the ground, years and years after the, you know, after the war, still taking lives and limbs, and everyone they were, you know, killing and maiming were civilians. So Mueller and Tomas Gebauer, who I'd worked with in Central America, which is how I ended up at that sneaky meeting, had come to the conclusion that the only way to really deal with landmines was to ban them, because they can stay in the ground and kill for generations. And then they look at me and they said, and we think you're the perfect person to create a coalition. And I was like, I've never thought of landmines. Why don't, as you pointed mm-hmm. out, why not nukes? The mm-hmm. wall just came down. Isn't it a perfect time mm-hmm. to go after nukes? But Mueller explained the difference.
So many people were getting killed. So yep. many innocent people yep. were getting killed, yep. even after wars ended.
Correct.
And so this campaign, which wound up with you getting the Nobel Peace Prize in 1997, culminated in a mine ban treaty mm-hmm. in 1996. Mm-hmm. And to go over a little bit of the history, one of the biggest obstacles was the United States military. And still the United States has not officially joined the mine ban treaty of 1996, even though I gather it has followed all of the treaty's obligations?
Correct.
And why didn't they join? What's mm-hmm. the U.S.'s official objection mm-hmm. to a treaty that I think to most people who followed it at all is kind of seen as pretty much mom and apple pie as peace movements go?
Exactly. I do want to point out that I did receive the Peace Prize, but so did the campaign.
Yes.
You know, without
the group.
Without gajillions of us coming together, working in 90 countries around the world, we would never have achieved what we did. It was we. The U.S., you know, had a variety of reasons for not joining, but under Clinton, which is he was in office at that time, he had actually been on the verge of signing. And then the regional commanders of the U.S. military had a meeting, and one of the points they discussed was a ban. And a couple of them kind of went ballistic and sort of told him in their own military way that they
because
needed
they
them.
Didn't want to have their hands tied with respect to how to win a war.
What they didn't want was to have civil society, ordinary people like you and me, have any say in the weapons that they choose to develop and use.
So is that battle now won? Are warriors using fewer landmines than they did our nation states because of your campaign?
Yes. As you pointed out, the United States, even though it has not signed, has not used landmines since the first Gulf War, 91, hasn't exported since 92, hasn't produced since the mid-90s, has destroyed millions of mines, and is the biggest donor for mine action, clearance, and victim assistance. So they're obeying the treaty. Mm-hmm. But I really think that the sticking point is the military refusing to sign that treaty, because they don't want to put other – and this is what one of the generals said at that time. If you – he was writing to Senator Patrick Leahy from the great state of Vermont, who was a leader in the Senate on this issue, and he wrote and said, if you persist on this path and landmines are banned, you will put other weapon systems available to the U.S. military at risk due to humanitarian concerns. In other words, we should not have to think about the impact of the weapons we use on people.
It's funny because I was actually thinking about landmines the other day, not knowing you were about to come on the show, in relation to the new debate about drones. Because mm-hmm. Honestly, your campaign made a big impression on me in the 1990s, and I was mm-hmm. a big fan of it. And peace activists, it seems to me, will always fight against the tools of war being used at the moment. Mm-hmm. So it was nuclear weapons in the Cold War, the potential for mm-hmm. a nuclear war. You campaigned against landmines in the mm-hmm. 90s. Today the action is to campaign against drones. Mm-hmm. And it's not that one weapon of war is any more despicable than any other, but that making each one seems horrifying is a way to fight against war in general, or does that go too far?
No, that when Mueller explained the landmine to me, that you know, you put it in the ground, the war ends, it stays there. Soldiers with guns, the war ends, the soldier and the gun goes home, in theory. But the landmine stays there to wreak havoc forever. essentially. And, you know, I immediately saw that that could be a prism through which you could get people to understand other long-term impacts of war that aren't quite as visible.
So what do you think about drones? Maybe this is actually a preferable way of war because it involves targeting individual warriors for assassination rather than, say, littering a country with landmines that any innocent civilians might step on for decades to come.
The drone is a tool for assassination, as you just said. It's not all that different from using artillery shells to assassinate a so-called terrorist. It's not that different from a SEAL team, you know, invading a house and shooting the person rather than capturing them. The issue with drones, although I find them morally reprehensible, is that they are used for extrajudicial execution, which is murder. But at the minimum, there is a human being still looking at the computer screen and choosing the target, deciding to push the buttons and release the missiles to kill the so-called terrorist. We are now starting a new campaign in April, we being a group of organizations that have been heavily involved in the landmines and cluster munition work, to stop killer robots. Think Terminator.
And do you think we have only a minute and a half left? Unfortunately, I wish we had another half hour. Is war inevitable, or can humans abolish war?
If they choose to. You know, Mr. Bush used to say, you get what you prepare for. No. He used to say, excuse me, if you want peace, you have to prepare for war.
Right.
I think that's bull. If you want peace, you teach what sustainable peace is.
And you want to tell us very quickly about the other campaign you're now very involved with, the Nobel Women's Initiative?
Well, I am the chairwoman of the Nobel Women's Initiative. There are six of us women who received the Peace Prize, and we are trying to share our influence and access with women around the world working for sustainable peace. But we also are the spearhead of an international campaign to stop rape and gender violence in conflict.
Do you think if there were more women heads of state or in high positions in government in general, that there would be less war in the world? Or is it not that? I mean, we know who's in prison for violent crimes, and they usually have the same chromosomes. But do you think it would matter? And we have 15 seconds.
I think women need to be in positions of power everywhere because it changes the conversation. It's not necessarily that we're better. It changes dramatically the conversation.
Jody Williams, winner of the 1997 Nobel Peace Prize, is author now of My Name is Jody Williams, A Vermont Girl's Winding Path to the Nobel Peace Prize. Thank you so much.
Thank you.